Yeah, I agree.
Dude, some fucking dumbass on the radio yesterday said the Warriors could win the championship without Steph Curry. I damn near lost my mind. I've never called in on the radio, but I was like, I was pulling out my phone. Really? I was like, I'm gonna fucking tear into this guy. I was haggling him on Twitter. I like added him like 3 times. I was like, because he said, because his like nickname, dude, all these fucking radio guys have like nicknames. He's JR the Brick. And I was like, are you the guy that called Steph Curry, that said Steph Curry couldn't win? They could win without him. And I was like, because then I could see why they call you the Brick. Welcome back to the Garage Hockey Podcast. I'm Felix Sicard, joined by Nick and Joe Berger. And today, we have some very, very exciting news. Probably the best thing that's ever happened to me. I mean, I've been talking about this for 5 years now. I can't even believe that I get to actually say this and record it and like put it out there. I'm so happy. I never thought I'd utter these words. Michel Therrien, the head coach of the Montreal Canadiens, has been fired. Dun, 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 dun. He's gone. In his place is not
an oldie but a goodie.
Not just anyone, you know, because it's funny. This morning I was talking to my mom and I was like, you know, because there's been a lot of rumors about the fact that he might get fired. And I thought, you know, now that all the big mainstream medias are kind of talking about it, like it's probably going to happen because they're being fed information. But then I was like, well, who are they going to bring in? You know, because the Canadiens coaching pool is so restricted to a French-speaking coach. So I thought, man, if they bring in like Bob Hartley or something, I'm just going to be like,
when will this waking nightmare end?
That would actually be a downgrade.
Yeah. But to my pleasant surprise, I wasn't completely surprised because I had been thinking about it.
I know you've been thinking about it.
I've been thinking about it. Claude Julien.
Your boy.
Claude Julien. Hired, he's once again the coach of the Canadiens. He's one of the five, maybe three best coaches in the league after like Babcock and Hitchcock, all the Cocks. And then he's right there, yeah. Like number three,
yeah.
Or two, I don't know. He's one of, like, there are about five coaches in the league where you can definitely say are better than the rest. After that, it's kind of a bit of a cesspool.
Mm.
And I would put that group at Mike Babcock, Ken Hitchcock, Lindy Ruff,
Daryl Sutter,
Bruce Boudreau, Claude Julien. Man, that might be it. Am I forgetting someone?
Probably.
I mean, there's some fringe guys.
Maybe you include guys like John Cooper, Pete DeBoer.
Mm. Maybe Mike Sullivan. Maybe.
Yeah.
Barry Trotz.
Yeah, Barry Trotz, Mike Sullivan. That's like about a good 10.
Yeah.
Yeah. Those are really like the guys. But out of those guys, there's only like a few that we know for sure. Because Mike Sullivan, he's obviously great, but he's only been doing it for a short amount of time.
Yeah.
Barry Trotz, I mean, he's amazing. Anyway, all that to say, Claude Julien, one of the best coaches in the league, is now coaching the Canadiens.
Yeah. You can finally take off your Boston Bruins jersey and put your Canadiens jersey
back on. Oh, my God. So I'm pretty pumped because for the longest time, it's felt like the Canadiens have had a really good roster that just isn't being optimized. And
you could say mismanaged.
Yeah, mismanaged. I mean, oh yeah, totally mismanaged. I mean, it got to the point
by the coach and the GM.
Well, and that's the thing. And that's where I don't want to put all the blame on Michel Therrien, because ultimately a general manager and an owner have that ability to make a change. And last summer, they chose their coach over their best defenseman, PK Subban. And here we are today with no more PK Subban and no more Michel Therrien. So nobody won that deal.
Weird.
And 9 more years of Shea Weber making like $20 million a year.
a defenseman who can be shut down in the playoffs.
And, you know, when I was thinking when that happened, when the signing happened, I thought back to that day and how I was so close to just saying, I'm not supporting this team anymore because, I mean, how can you possibly trade Subban? Not just trade Subban, which is already a sign of like lunacy, but also to trade him for Shea Weber, man, who like, I like Shea Weber, But he's sucked for the past 3 months. Mm. He hasn't played well. And he's okay. He's a good defenseman. But, man, like, it's PK Subban. So I thought back to that day. I'm like, if I could survive that, this was, like, my reward.
Yeah.
This like, was... I was tested, you know. My fanhood was really tested. It was pushed to its limits. But now, we'll see now. You know, because it still sounds like they're thinking about trading Alex Galchenyuk.
Really?
Yeah.
That'd be a mistake.
That sounds insane. Well,
the rumor is that they're thinking of trading him for Matt Duchene.
Okay.
Which
okay, now I'm interested.
Yeah.
Well, I think Galchenyuk's like, I think Galchenyuk's the better player.
And he's younger.
He's 3 years younger. The thing with Duchene is that he's signed for a little longer at only Duchene only makes $6 million a year, man.
Really? What a steal.
Yeah, but I think Galchenyuk's just all around the better player. Mm. I think he's a better shooter. He's a better skater.
Duchene doesn't play center, right?
He is a center.
Oh, he is?
Yeah. I mean, Duchene's very good.
Why did I think he was a wing?
Okay. But Galchenyuk's only going to get better. That's the thing. And everyone's talking about the fact that Galchenyuk is struggling this year at center. And it's like, well, no one should be mad or upset or surprised because they've refused to put him at center until this year, basically.
Yeah. And you know, like his development at center has been directly tied to Michel Therrien.
That's the thing. And you look at the way Therrien has operated and you think how many young guys in this team have had their confidences completely shot or their development's just completely, I don't want to say derailed, but just completely deviated from what they could have been. And I look at a guy like Nathan Beaulieu, who I see chip the puck out like 50,000 times a game now. And when he first came up, looked like a Cam Fowler type. And I look at a guy like, you know, even PK Subban, it was the same thing. He became a dump out machine. And I think under a different coach, how it could have been.
Probably one of the top five best skaters in the league dumps the puck out.
Yeah. And so now you got Claude Julien, who is known to be a really good defensive coach. And not just a good defensive coach. I mean, you look at the Bruins of the past like 6 years, and they've always been tops in goal scoring, too.
Always.
I think you may have retweeted this earlier, but the knock on Claude Julien has always... like, or the thing on the Bruins is, you know, they've been known for the defense since they won their cup.
Yeah.
And, you know, the knock on Claude Julien was that, you know, the Bruins were awful managing forward group or whatever. And you know, then it was like, I think like 5 out of the last 8 years, they finished in like the top 5 in offense.
Yeah.
So, you know, he's going to not only bring stability to the defense, you know, because Montreal's defense in like...
even with Weber.
In the previous years, hasn't been great. It hasn't been much outside of Subban and Markov. And, you know, now this year, they have good defensemen. And like you said, even with Weber. And, you know, bringing Julien is, you know, going to optimize them.
Yeah.
And like I was saying with, you know, the Bruins finishing really high in offense, you know, for most of the year since they won the cup. Like, that, if optimize the defense and then, you know, improve the offense, which was just sort of a mess.
Yeah, no, totally. Because now, as much as you would think it'd be worse without Subban, they've actually kind of improved just from within because Jeff Petrie has taken a huge step forward. I mean, it's not like he's some young guy, but he's just become this just like stud defenseman. I mean, he was always really good, but this year especially. And then Beaulieu, even though he's, you know, kind of, I don't want to say regressing, but he's not really coming along. Like, he's still a good defenseman. Slowing down, but still steady back there. Weber, even Yemelin is kind of okay. They traded for Nesterov. That was a nice move that I liked.
Yeah.
Has he played yet?
Yeah, he's played. He scored.
Oh,
okay. Scored his first game. Or his second game. Yeah, nice little one-timer from the point.
The first thing that I thought of was, man, Boston looks bad for firing Julien in the middle of the season because if they had fired him at the end of the season, then maybe, you know, Montreal doesn't get the chance to, you know, pounce on him, especially when Montreal is still in first place. Like, they haven't played nearly as well as they did to start the season.
Yeah, they were like
13-1.
Yeah, 13-1, and since then they're 18-7.
Yeah, but
yeah,
that's not 500. That's a losing record.
Yeah, but yeah, they're still in first place, and now they have a significantly better coach. Like,
yeah,
and
we'll see how quickly he can turn them around.
Yeah, and that's going to be interesting to see, and that could depend on what Mark Bergevin does. I don't think they'll trade Galchenyuk for Duchesne.
Oh, you never know.
No,
you if Marc Bergevin has proven anything since he came to Montreal, it's that you never know what he's gonna do.
That's true.
You literally have no idea. Like, he's capable of doing the stupidest stuff and like the most brilliant. Like, think about the summer he had, trading Subban for Weber, and then signing Alexander Radulov for what might be the best free agent signing in the last, like, I don't know how many years. And then now firing Therrien, bringing in Julian. It's like, this guy's all over the place.
Yeah.
And I mean, don't forget that when they got Jeff Petrie for a second round draft pick, maybe 2 second rounders.
Well worth it.
I mean, come on. Like, that's a steal.
Yeah.
You know who could really use Jeff Petrie? The Edmonton Oilers. So
that would be pretty great for them.
So I wouldn't rule out Galchenyuk getting traded. Yeah, I just think it'd be such a lateral move.
It does. Yeah, no, it does feel lateral. Especially, it's kind of interesting because Galchenyuk, they've refused to play him at center, which is where he always plays well. And, you know, for centers, they have more defensive responsibilities. So if you do want him to ultimately play center, you don't want to stunt his development and, you know, like, set him back even more. So you want to have him there. He's played well there in the past, had that career year last year. And even the year before, I think he had like 25 goals or something.
30.
He had 30 again.
He had 30 last year.
Yeah, but the year before that. I think he was like in the mid-20s, but...
Yeah, I mean, he did play a lot of center last year, and this year he started as a center, played most of the season at center before he got hurt, and then now that he's come back, they've been putting him on the wing.
And I think the fact
inexplicably.
I think the fact that he got hurt, like, you can't discount that in, you know, when you're considering inconsistency this season.
Yeah.
So you're right. I think it would be a lateral move. I think Duchesne is going to get traded for Hartman, who's overrated, and like a first round pick or something. And Chicago will still lose in the second
round.
That'd be
so stupid. If
whatever.
That'd be, man. Yeah. Okay.
You just blew his mind. He needs a quick reboot.
Yeah. Well, I think because it sounds like the Anaheim might not do anything. I was doing a podcast on Sunday with Larry Fisher. I don't want to act like I'm cheating on this podcast or anything, but
it is Valentine's Day, man. Yeah, don't hurt my feelings. I'm not ready for this moment.
Oh yeah, this is the Valentine's Day podcast.
Yeah, it is.
But yeah, and we were making a bet on like how many trades there would be.
You guys were betting on air, so unethical.
And I said 24. I said 24 trades, and that's about. A little more than there have been the last couple years.
It sounds like a lot.
No.
24.
But the thing is, I think that the expansion draft and all that.
Oh, yeah. It's.
I think it's actually going to. I don't think it's going to fire everyone up. I think it's actually going to have a weird.
Consolidating effect?
Yeah. Well, not consolidating, but I think it's going to kind of hold people back. It's going to make people more cautious instead of making them freewheeling. It's going to go two ways. It's going to go either it's completely freewheeling, like someone's going to make a big move and it's going to cause this big domino effect, or everyone's going to be a little tiptoey, a little like not wanting to make the first move, and then it's going to be kind of like, well, no one's going to draw out their pistol and then there's just no gunfight, basically. Mm. That's the way I see it shaking out, because I think it's like I was saying before we started recording, no one really has to make a trade now. Unless you're certain to make, you can still make a trade once the season ends. So...
And you know, the problem is, you know, when the season ends, there's only going to be...
That's when all the action might be.
2 weeks max.
Oh, but that's... See, max. I think that's when we're going to see the action. Because the difference this year, and again, we were talking about this because it was a big trade deadline bonanza episode. But basically, who's really a seller this year? Because everyone went into the season... Literally, if you think about it, every team this season went in trying to be good.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone, even the Vancouver Canucks,
even the Coyotes,
even like everyone. So it's, I don't know if, and you look at the East and the team, the last place team in the East, who I can't remember right now, are like 8 points from the last wild card spot.
We're thinking Tampa.
It might be Tampa, possibly.
Are they out last place now? Hold on.
Well, anyway, no one's in the East. No one's really out of it yet.
Right.
And in the West, I mean,
a few teams are.
Teams like Vancouver are still somehow 6 or 8 points out.
Detroit's last in the East
right now. Yeah, Detroit. Ooh. But they're not... I mean, look, how many points are they back?
7.
Okay. So, anyway, no one's really out of it. So, who really wants to sell? Because for there to be big trades, you have to have teams that are just willing to dump assets, basically.
Right.
So, we'll see. Anyway, coming back to the Canadiens, I don't know what the, you know, short-term effect will be. I don't know. There's no way to really know how quickly Julian is going to be able to change things in the system and how much he's even going to try. Like, what, you know, which assistants are going to be brought back. It sounds like the only guy who's really safe is Kirk Muller and then the goalie coach, Stefan Waite.
Well, would Muller come back? Was he wasn't with them last year, was he?
No. He got hired over the summer as an associate head coach.
But he left St. Louis, correct?
Yeah.
And that's because St. Louis hired Mike Yeo to step in for Hitchcock if and when he got fired.
Yeah.
And so he was like, okay, I'm not going to be the next in line. I'm going to go to Montreal, where the coaching seat is very hot.
Yeah.
And now they bring in Claude Julien, and you know he's not just stepping in for this half of the season. So,
but I'm not convinced that Kirk Muller came to Montreal just to kind of be waiting on Therrien to be fired. I think he was comfortable with the market. He'd coached there before. He played there, and because there was no head coaching job available, I think he found that to be a good landing spot.
Yeah.
That's the way it was kind of presented. So, you know, there are openings. There will be openings this summer, and Kirk Muller's as good of a candidate as any.
Yeah.
You know, if you're looking at Kirk Muller versus Gerard Gallant, what's really the difference?
Yeah.
I don't know. So, all that to say that I think he's safe for now. I don't know if they're going to bring back the other guys, you know, Dan Lacroix, JJ Daigneau. I don't know if those guys are coming back. Because obviously Julian has his guys. But hey, man, I am excited. For the first time in about, man, I don't know how long, I'm like all in on this team again.
Yeah.
So, because when there's a coach you hate, man, it is so hard to, so hard to root for a team.
Yeah.
So hard to root for a team. And, you know, I'm for sure going to develop some gripes with Julian, but I objectively know that this guy is a good coach.
Yeah, I mean, I've forgotten what it's like because there hasn't been a Sharks coach that I disliked since Ron Wilson.
Yeah, the Sharks have had a really good run of coaches.
Yeah.
You know, DeBoer, McClellan.
Yeah.
So
it'll be...
And even with that Daryl... Didn't they have Daryl Sutter?
Yeah, and yeah, he was good.
Wilson. Yeah, so they haven't had too many bad coaches in recent memory.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting to see what happens with Julian because, one, I think that this was really good timing for Montreal. I don't think this could have happened.
Because they're on their bye week.
Yeah, they're on their bye week. They're still in first place, and it's still middle of February, so he's got a little bit of time because we know that when new coaches step into new teams, it takes a little bit of time for them to get to know the players, for the players to understand the system, and to just sort of let everyone settle into a groove. So I think they've got enough time before the playoffs to sort of settle things down.
I mean, they're in first place, but I think they have like a 6 or 8 point lead. I think it might be 6 points over Ottawa.
Mm.
But Ottawa has like 4 games in hand or something.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a pretty tenuous first place. But yeah, like they're firmly in like the playoff mix. Yeah. You know, even if they finish all the way down in third, like I think right now I saw a model that said they have like a 91% chance of making the playoffs.
So Montreal is 6 points ahead and they've played 4 more games than Ottawa.
Yeah, exactly. So
Ottawa could technically be 2 points ahead of that.
By the end of the week, we'll see. But you look at the way this team is constructed, the way certain moves will be made at the trade deadline, the coaching upgrade, if Carey Price can turn things around, to me, this is a Stanley Cup contender.
Yeah.
No doubt.
Because that's the difference between this year and last year is, again, you look at both seasons, hot start, they've trailed off, but now they have the coach, they have Carey Price, and I think, one, when a coach like Julian becomes available and your team is struggling,
you have to
go for it. But also Bergevin said, oh shit, I've seen this story. It happened last year. Like, I need to nip this in the bud and avoid it because I know where this is going.
Well, I think Bergevin knew as well that, I mean, every decision that's being made revolves around the fact that Carey Price is a free agent in the summer of 2018.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And so have to be all in on this year and next year.
Yeah, because you don't know if you're going to get him back.
And Pacioretty is going to run up. Galchenyuk is up this summer. So they're facing some really tough decisions.
Yeah.
I mean, those guys are going to come back, but the flexibility is going to go down.
And, you know, Carey Price is going to get record money somewhere.
Yeah, I mean, I would be shocked if he left.
I would be too.
Because I think he's going to get, like, they're going to pay him, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And I think with him especially, with his injury history, he's going to be looking more for the security and the, you know, he just, you know, has his first child. And I think his wife is kind of, she's pretty embedded in like the Montreal area community. So I'd be shocked to see Carey Price leave.
Yeah,
you don't really see goaltenders change teams. I feel like, like big name goaltenders,
you don't see them bolt in free agency often. No. I think
you can. It's like, where's Carey Price gonna go?
He's definitely gonna be looking for a $2 million increase because he's making 6.5 right now, and Lundqvist is making 8.5. And I think he's the one who signed the highest amount for a goalie.
And
ever.
The cap is gonna change, and so we'll see. I think I just don't know where he would go.
Yeah.
I mean, where's he going to go where his Stanley Cup odds are going to be considerably better that can afford him? Because Washington can't afford him. Pittsburgh's not going to be able to afford him unless they, you know, don't have a fourth line.
And also, why would either of those teams go for him? Like, they have their goaltenders.
Well, we'll see about Pittsburgh. But, I mean,
I think they really like Matt Murray.
Yeah, they do for some reason.
Just want to repeat that Washington looks like the favorites.
Yeah, they look... They're
destroying people.
And conversely, the Vancouver Canucks. Oh my God!
Oh, like, didn't they beat, or what happened?
They got destroyed by Pittsburgh today, and their team defense.
What was the score?
It was like 4-0.
Oh, okay.
Their team defense literally hurts my feelings. It's so bad.
Yeah,
it's so bad.
Yeah.
But getting back to Julian, I'm not even a Habs fan, and I was super excited.
I mean,
I just know how much it means to you.
Man, it still doesn't feel real.
Yeah.
Why was he fired? Or was he fired or let go the first time?
Therrien?
No, Julian.
The first time he was fired, he was coaching a team that wasn't just all that good. The 05-06 Canadians. They weren't all that good. They were going through a really bad spell. They were coming off a couple of years of like playoff series and... They had gotten off to a really hot start, like, as the Canadians, I guess, tend to always do. I don't know.
This is a pattern.
They got off to a really good start, and then there was this nightmare, like, month of December where, like, Jose Theodore would let in, like, 7 goals against Vancouver or something like that, and he was gone. And then they hired Carboneau, and then after that, they hired Randy Cunnyworth, or I guess he came in replaced. Oh, no, sorry. Wow. Carboneau and then Jacques Martin.
Yes.
Right.
And then
Randy Cunnyworth.
Cunnyworth and then Therrien.
Yeah.
So man, it's been
it has been quite a carousel.
It's funny cuz I think the best coach out of all of those outside of Julian's probably Jacques Martin.
Yeah.
Cuz he was actually a pretty good coach.
Mm.
Coached a super boring team, but he was just a super boring person.
Yeah.
talk about like emotionless coaches on the bench.
Yeah. Yeah, completely gray.
But he's a really smart like systems guy. I mean, he's an assistant for the Penguins.
Yeah.
So he knows what he's doing. But yeah, man. So you look at this team now, and you got to be excited.
I have high hopes for them.
I just really hope they don't trade Galchenyuk for Duchesne. I mean, it feels like it's not going to happen because it's so out there.
I just think there are other teams I would push harder. Like I've heard Pittsburgh thrown out there also. And I can see them doing that because he's got the speed, so he fits right in.
Man,
with
if Duchesne goes to Pittsburgh,
that would be scary. I would be upset.
I mean,
it would look great for my Stanley Cup prediction, but
man, I love Duchesne, but I'm like, how much better does he make the Penguins?
Well, that's the thing. The Penguins don't need Matt Duchesne, but it would be nice to have him.
Yeah, like because I mean, the reason why I'm not so gung-ho on the Canadians trading Galchenyuk for him is outside of the monetary reasons, he's not a better player.
Mm.
So
like you said, it's a lateral move. They're similar types of players.
It's not completely lateral because they save money and they get term. So
I'm thinking more on the ice though, but you're right.
Like from a purely on ice standpoint, I don't even think it's lateral because I think they get worse.
Mm.
Not by much, but like, I think the people that really want Matt Duchesne haven't seen him play all that much. Like, he's a good player, but he
is very streaky, and if he's not scoring goals, there's not that much else going on.
He's a really good playmaker. He's really quick. Not a huge fan of his shot.
Yeah.
I don't think he has the greatest shot, but he's a great player.
I think he's a top
center, you know,
yeah.
Top one or two.
He's a blue line defying center.
Yes. If I'm taking a pick out of those three guys, MacKinnon, Landeskog, or Duchesne.
Give me MacKinnon any day.
Yeah, I'd have to think about it.
Yeah, MacKinnon.
I would, right now, I'd lean maybe Landeskog.
Really?
He's really good, man. He's kind of become a bit underrated. I guess the issue with him
is doing dirty things.
Well, yeah, I think the issue with him is that he's just not a center, and so if you want to like build your team, you kind of would rather have like the kind of flashy center.
Yeah, I was about to say it depends on what you want. Do you want a center? Do you want a finesse forward, or do you want a power forward?
Because the weird thing about Landeskog is that although I think he's a really good two-way player, and he's he's super skilled, but he's kind of stopped shooting the puck in recent years. And I don't know if that's because of the guys he's playing with, but he's only 24.
Yeah.
But then again, MacKinnon is like 21 or 22.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, he's definitely like under 23.
And he's really good.
Yeah. But man, MacKinnon's having a weird season. Like, I don't know. And he only had 21 goals last year or something?
Yeah, he had kind of a down year last year.
So, not that I'm expecting him to score 40, but when you watch MacKinnon play, you're like, why isn't this guy scoring 80 points a year?
Yeah, he should have, over 20 goals right now with the kind of skill that he has.
But that's the thing with him, though, is that he's so young. I guess if it came down to it, I would probably take MacKinnon. But I wouldn't feel... I'd feel good about it because I'm getting a really good player. But I'd be like, man, did I potentially leave something on the table with the two other guys?
I think I get that.
He looks so dynamic, though. Everything he does... And, I think this kind of gets him into trouble sometimes. Is he's doing everything so fast, it's almost like you don't have to deke the guy and then pass it. You can just pass it. So the thing with those three guys, though, is, again, although I like all three of them, I feel like because that team has been so bad and has been so mismanaged, I wonder if there's not a bit of, damaged goods effect going on,
Yeah.
Where it's like if you're trading, especially, look at Neil Yakupov, man. You trade for that guy, and you're just getting, you got to build him back up. And I don't think any of those guys are at that point necessarily, but...
It is a concern.
I mean, because you could shoehorn them into any lineup, and they make that team better.
Yeah.
But it's like, and again, if you're Colorado, why do you have to trade those guys? I've been so... My head in the sand, I'm assuming these guys have to be traded. Why do they have to trade those guys again?
I mean, you're right, they don't.
Are they free agents or something? Do we know?
I think, because the way that people seem to look at this stuff is, oh, it's not working with these guys, so it's never going to work with these guys together, so we have to blow it up.
Or they're the problem.
Yeah, or they're the problem. Yeah. I agree with you.
It's the Jordan Eberle syndrome.
Go all in on those guys and actually put a good team around them, which they haven't done, not even close.
Colorado is a bad example of this, but, you get rid of, you have multiple coaches, and it's not working with very, very talented young players. And so you get rid of the coaches, and the next move is to get rid of the players. I mean, like I said, they're not the best example because the coaches that they had, it wasn't going to work no matter, who it was. The Penguins would not have won the Stanley Cup last year with Patrick Waugh as their coach.
No, probably not. Yeah. I mean, they might not have even made the conference finals with Mike Johnson. So coaching is important in hockey. Yeah, by the way,
so with the Avs, they've gotten rid of they have coaches where it's just not working, and the next step is just the players. It's not working with them. It didn't work with the coaches. It's not working with them. So now we have to move on from them. While they still have value.
Well, that's the thing is I just feel like they're such a hot mess that right now I don't know if now is the time to. Unless they're certain, and I mean, of course, they have a much better idea than any of us do. At least I hope.
Theoretically.
But I don't know if now, in the middle of the season, is the time to really, assume that you know what the problem is and go all in on changing it. Because so much weird stuff can happen in the season. I mean, look at Claude Julien. The whole point of this podcast, you look at why Boston fired him. And I mean, the underlying numbers with Boston and... The only reason they were playing bad, they had bad results, is because of mostly bad luck.
Yeah,
and I mean, Colorado's been downright awful. But at the same time, I don't know if now is the time to make those sweeping sort of assessments and act upon them, unless you're sure. That's why for me, coaching is a little bit easier to move. Obviously, because you can just fire a guy, you can't cut a player. It's not the NFL. But to me, with a coach, I think you can tell pretty quickly if it's working or not. With a player, players are very reliant, like you guys are saying, on the system, on their surrounding teammates. With the coach, it's like you got to figure. You can make a judgment pretty quickly. And I thought I'd get through the whole podcast. I was talking about the Ducks. But, like, the Ducks right now, you're not going to convince me Randy Carlyle is making this team better.
Yeah.
If they were to fire him tomorrow, of course, I would be okay with it. But you look at other people, and I think they'd be like, well, he didn't get a chance. Well, look at what he did.
That's technically a second chance.
Yeah, and then you look at Michelle Therrien, and people are like, oh, you know, they feel bad for him. Like, hey, he got 5 years. He got five, well, not five complete seasons, but he had basically 5 years to get this team to a Stanley Cup. That's a long time.
And you could argue it's been 2.5 years too long.
Especially in Montreal,
and you look
of all places.
You look in other sports, like in football, it feels like this happens all the time where new coaches get brought in and they have like a 5-year plan.
Yeah.
Like,
well, coaches in football get fired way too soon.
Yeah.
Because football, more than any sport, is so coach reliant.
Right.
But I think hockey's interesting because I think it's good to have that continuity because a coach can, like Michelle Therrien, I think did get better as time went along. Mm. Marginally better, still making weird decisions, but I think this season he had obviously changed something in the way he was coaching because the sort of underlying numbers, the way the team was playing, it just looked better, right? But I think in hockey, though, you can change it on a dime pretty quickly. You know, it's not that hard to tell guys, all right, instead of doing this on the forecheck, I want you guys doing this.
Yeah.
You know, and instead of doing this in the D zone, I want you guys doing this. That doesn't take that long to implement. Mm. You're not writing a playbook.
Yeah.
You know, you're just telling guys how you want them reacting to the other team and how you want them pushing play.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone talks about how with DeBoer, he wants guys always pressuring the puck. You know, that's something that might take a little while to get really good at, and that's why when you have a good coach, you want to give him as much time as possible, but at the same time, it's got to be something worth implementing.
Well, the thing that takes time is working on the instincts, because...
Yeah, allowing guys to make those reads.
Yeah, exactly. Like, using the example of pressuring the puck... more for
like what does that mean?
Yeah, it's like, when do I pressure it, you know, when yeah. do I sit back or be more passive or whatever. So it's like, it's just about making those reads, and that's the part that I think takes time for players to adjust to.
Yeah, and even just making, I mean, because the thing with hockey that I think it's unfortunately really lost, especially in the broadcast, because you watch a hockey game and even the best commentators, sometimes you don't really find out how things are happening on the ice. You just kind of get to like, oh, look at this big face-off win, or look at this face-off play. But you don't get to like, because if anyone's ever played hockey, you know that, and you've been coached, practices and all that, you know when you're looking at that whiteboard in practice, there's a lot of moving pieces. You know, mm-hmm. It's like, one, this guy's curling this way, and then once you get here, I need you to curl back, and then this guy's curling the other way, and then the D-man, other D-man, I need you to loop. And it's just like, there's so many moving pieces, yeah. And for... I feel like fans just don't really get that, you know?
Right.
Unfortunately, because I think if a guy on TV were to be showing it, it'd be really interesting. That's why I think football can be so interesting on TV with guys like Chris Collinsworth, is because they're telling you how it's working. And then you're like, oh, I get it, you know?
Just from a player standpoint, when, you know, you're running a system, first, you know, there are two things. If someone has never played that system before, there's learning the choreography of it,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, recognizing, you know, what I have to do when this happens,
yeah.
And two, there's understanding the purpose behind it, and that leads to you being able to anticipate,
yeah.
And, you know,
if you
understand the purpose, you know what's coming next, you know why that's happening,
yeah.
And, you know, if that allows you to make the best decisions, like, okay, this is what I'm supposed to do next, is this going to be best, or should I maybe, you know, back off on it a little bit and then see what it actually gives me, and, you know,
yeah.
go from there.
And I feel like the thing with NHL players is that they're very smart, because they're so, everything is about systems, and so they'll be able to recognize stuff quickly. But what I'm a little worried about with the Canadians is, not only are they going to have to learn the new stuff, but they're going to have to unlearn mm-hmm. the old stuff.
Right.
And who knows how long that's going to take.
The other thing that's interesting that you don't really pick up from broadcasters, or just even from watching, is... not everything is like black and white. Like, there's always
there's
like,
adjustments, yeah.
Like on 2-on-1s, for example, we always think you're always supposed to take the pass, right? We have friends that have scrimmaged with the Sharks where Evgeny Nabokov has said to our buddies, hey, if you're defending 2-on-1 and these two guys are coming down at you, I don't want you to take the pass. I want you to go for the guy. Like
that way I can just start sliding or whatever.
Yeah, like it's very, because these guys all read the scouting reports and they all watch the video, so they know guys' tendencies.
Yeah.
And they
know. The game within the game.
Yeah, like this guy, you don't want to let him take the shot. You want to pressure him, or this guy is going to pass every time, so you want to take that pass. So,
oh, yeah.
A lot of it is very, it's much more situational than I think anyone really leads you to believe.
Absolutely. And I mean, like, that's one of the best parts about hockey to me, is that it's all about reacting. Like, it's read and react. And so, and it's all about, like, where you're positioning yourself. And it's so free flowing. Like, I remember back when I was playing in college, you know, college roller, I remember when we started, our coach started trying to get us to become like a cycle team. Mm. And if you play roller hockey, that's not how teams play.
That's not the game.
It's all about, you know, kind of like, I guess you could call it fast break hockey, where it's all just, you know, you're coming down on the rush. Right. There's no setting up.
Yeah, you're using the whole rink and looking for one specific look, one specific pass.
Yeah.
And if it's not there, you start over.
And so he had us playing this cycle game. And I remember when we were learning it, and back then I was a goalie, but I would still be watching, you know, because I'm not really participating in those drills. As a goalie, there's not really much shooting going on. And I did it as a skater too later on. And it's like, you learn so much about, wow, like, where I'm positioned actually really matters, you know, like, and even on a rush, like, I mean, there's some really good accounts you can follow on Twitter of guys who will point out like the system stuff. Like, even when you're coming out like a 3-on-2, when you have that middle guy who just the middle drive, this is like one of the biggest plays in hockey that no one really talks about. It's almost like a moving screen.
Yeah.
It's actually not really like, I don't think it should be legal.
Yeah. Like, I mean, like,
cause you're basically, what you're doing is, so for people who don't know what I'm talking about, you have a 3-on-2, or it could be even a 3-on-3, whatever. And your middle forward, as you're rushing, is just going to drive to the net and basically going to take a guy with him.
Mm-hmm.
And that creates then a middle lane that you can use, that you can exploit to make a pass across. So,
yeah, depending on how you do it, stuff like that. It's kind of like a soft pick.
But the thing is, it's legal because you have a right to your own ice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So if you're trying to move forward, the guy's in your way, what can you really do?
And that's the thing about that also, is you don't necessarily have to initiate contact.
Yeah.
Just the sheer fact that you are going to the net, the dangerous scoring area, is going to take the defenseman with you, whether you even touch him or not.
Yeah, so there's a ton of nuance in this game. And all that to say, to bring it back to Claude Julien, is that these guys are professionals, and they're going to do everything in their power to prepare the guys, to teach them in the new system. And who knows how much Julien will even want to change. You know,
yeah, that's a good point.
He's a smart guy, and fuck, there might be some things he likes about Terran system. I don't know. I hope not.
I mean,
I kind of doubt it. You know,
because there are two things that he can change. He can either change the system, or he can change the lineup. So maybe,
yeah.
And maybe that's the thing they need. Maybe it's, you know, getting guys in the proper places.
Well, I think the biggest thing they need to change is the system more than the lineup. They need to change both.
So what specifically, what do you want to see?
Okay, so the thing that the Canadians do a lot, which I don't think they pull off, and they've been doing it for a while now, is instead of breaking it out cleanly, where you have a forward coming low, like basically curling back as sort of that short pass, and then you have another pass going through the neutral zone, they love to just lob it and get puck races going. And the Penguins do this a lot, except the Penguins pull it off.
Because they have speed.
Yeah. They have more speed, exactly. And I think the Sharks kind of tried doing this too a little bit. But the Habs like to do this a lot. And either they don't have the speed, or the execution's not there. The system isn't really coded properly. But I think what's been observed to work really well in the NHL, teams like Tampa Bay do this really well, is that controlled exit.
What I see a lot of teams, at least a few years ago, how they would break the puck out is they would have two guys curling really low, and they would be in like a stick's length of each other, distance from each other, and then, you know, the third forward would be curling, he'd be crossing, curling the opposite way, and that would give the defense one option up ahead, and the guy curling below would be just a little bit behind them. So it essentially gave them two options where they wanted to pass it to. And if that first one was covered, you give it to the second one. And then your emergency option was the third guy coming and going the opposite way.
Yeah.
And then once they got that first pass out of the zone, then they would, you know, be a little more creative in the neutral zone, and that would enable them to enter the offensive zone.
Yeah. I mean, there's a saying, I don't know if this applies to ice hockey, but what our coach would always say for us is one high, one low, one fast, one slow. Mm-hmm. And basically, you have your long option, your short option, and then you have your different speeds at which guys are going at. And I think what actually has been observed, some really cool data tracking that's been done, forgetting the name of the project right now, but basically, what makes the best forechecks, and conversely, what makes the best breakouts, right? And like, there are people right now tracking all this stuff, trying to figure out what makes a team really successful in terms of those two aspects, and then how does that affect, you know, overall like shot attempt share. And one thing that's been observed is that basically the teams that do really well in the breakout are the teams that tend to, instead of, so what the Canadians will do a lot of is when they're pressured, like when the D-man is being pressured on the forecheck, instead of trying to make a play, he's just going to send it up the wall every single time because it's the safe play, right? You're not losing anything in that moment. But what happens is the other team is going to recover it and they're going to be back in your zone. What the best teams do is they'll just reverse it. They'll just send it back because there's all that negative space behind you and there's a guy, there's most likely a D-man wide open. So the plays, the breakout plays that have the most success are the reverse plays.
Yeah.
Which makes a lot of sense because you're passing it to a guy who has no pressure on him, typically behind the net, who's going to be able to make a clean play, whether it be a short pass, maybe skating it out himself. And that's something that the Canadians just do not do. And it's actually something that a lot of teams don't do enough of. The Ducks don't do it enough. They used to, but now they're playing a system that just basically says, and this is what keeps coaches hired, is that if you're constantly dumping it out, it's never going to look like you're making a mistake.
That's so unfortunate for the Ducks too, because they have the personnel on the back end to pull off this controlled breakout.
Yeah. But the thing is, to have a clean, controlled breakout, it takes guys who have a lot of confidence with the puck, and it takes a lot of organization. And with the Canadians, I think they have the guys to do it, but I think what happened with them is that they didn't trust the guys they had to do it.
That's the only thing I can think of.
They never trusted a guy like Subban to do it. They never trusted a guy like Beaulieu.
Oh, because Subban turned the puck over one time in overtime and come on.
I don't know. I think to me, what you do, and this is why I think the Penguins aren't wrong for playing the way they do, is because A, they have the forwards to win those puck battles, but B, you look at the defensemen they have, and they don't have any playmakers back there outside of Letang. Right? So how do you maximize those guys?
Mm.
Well, what you do is you basically absolve yourself of any risk from those positions. If you're telling the guys to just lob it, you know, you're not going to get hurt by their deficiencies.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah. It just makes so much sense though, because you're moving the puck away from pressure, and what you're talking about is like moving it back behind the net.
Mm-hmm.
You also see teams do this to try and get through the neutral zone trap. So they're up ice a little further, and someone will carry the puck up the wing and then throw it back to the guy that they call the hinge,
mm-hmm.
that defenseman in the middle, and then it's away from pressure, so then they can move it to the other side.
Yeah.
The trap is already committed to the strong side that you move the puck from in the first place.
Yeah. Hockey is all about creating space, and it's a little hard for someone to visualize this listening, but that's kind of what we're trying to get at. The best teams are typically the ones that are also the best at creating space for themselves, and not only creating it but manipulating it, right? Especially if you watch like a power play, like watch the Washington Capitals power play. All they're trying to do is isolate one side of the ice so that they can just swing it back to Ovechkin, who's wide open. He's not wide open as much anymore, but that's really what they're trying to do, is get everyone on one side. That way they can release that pressure, get it out to the shooter, and then get an easy goal. So
yeah, that's why you see overloads, and even on breakouts too, you'll see defensemen look one way or even completely face their body one way and then mm-hmm. pass it back the other way.
Yeah, I mean, I rag on Cam Fowler a lot, but what he's really good at is he does the Mohawk, where basically he's got, with both his skates, his toes are pointing outward. So
in opposite directions.
It looks like he's about to pivot away, or he's pivoting, but then he's just going to keep moving forward.
Yeah.
And it totally fools the defender every time.
I think it's such an underrated skating move.
Oh, yeah. No, it's beautiful to watch. It's actually, I think it's from figure skating.
Yeah, I think
so. So that's probably why it's so aesthetically pleasing.
Yeah, because I watch defensemen do this. Brent Burns is really good at it, where he'll be coming up the ice, and then he'll just open up, and then straighten out again as soon as he gets past the guy. Because as soon as you open up, they don't know, are you going to keep going? Are you going to pass it? Because all of a sudden you're facing a different direction.
Yeah.
And then you sort of freeze them, and then you can keep going, and you have all these options because you see all the ice.
Man, those two goals he had against New Jersey were pretty.
Dude, barred down.
I mean, I think the goalie was screened on both. But they were perfect shots.
That second one, like, he shot it right over the guy's toes.
Yeah.
And it just kept rising. Like, he had such, when you think about it, he had such a small window there. And I can't remember who said this, but it's so beautifully articulate the way he said this. It's like he shoots the puck around a corner.
And this is what that goal specifically is back to what we were talking about in hockey, creating space. He had the puck in a shooting position, and the defender went up to and challenged it to, you know, get in the shooting lane and block it like a goalie. And once he planted his feet, Burns did a little toe drag and changed the shooting angle. So
yeah.
And since its reach is so long, it significantly changed the angle.
Yeah, so he was holding the puck out, not really intending to shoot it from there, because he knew it was going to be blocked. And so he pulled it in closer to his body where there's no one in front of him. And suddenly it goes from being a blocked shot to being wide open. And, you know, obviously it got through a couple other people because, you know, Brent Burns is that good.
That's just what he does. Yeah,
it's what makes him better than a lot of other, you know,
potentially every defenseman this year.
but, you know, he created that space, you know, by manipulating the forechecker and then bringing it a little closer into, you know, a position where he could still wire it.
Yeah. I mean, I could just hear someone saying right now, or a purist saying, so much of this is because of the stick technology. Like, yeah, but 20 years ago, you can't shoot the puck like that.
Yeah. I mean,
you just can't, because you can't shoot it off the toe.
And, you know, 20 years ago, except for Ryan Smith, anyone would take sticks like these.
Yeah.
So, like,
yeah.
If they had the technology, they'd be using it then. You know, that stuff is here to stay.
Yeah.
Deal with it.
And the game is better for it.
I mean, yeah, like, I'm not, like, mad about it, but you watch, like a couple weekends ago, I was watching tape of like the 1959 Stanley Cup final, and I was like, man,
you roll so deep. I'm so proud of you.
Well, no, but I was just like, man, like, because these guys can play.
Yeah.
Like, it's good hockey, but they just don't shoot the same because they're using wooden sticks with flat blades.
Yeah.
But they can still shoot it, man. Like, it's actually really interesting because I was watching, it was the Leafs against the Canadiens. And it's such a free-flowing game. There's really not much organization, but it's there. You can tell there's a strategy, but it's very, very free-flowing.
Yeah,
it's very fast actually.
Because
it's interesting.
Those elbows come at you fast.
It's surprisingly not as rough as I thought it would be.
Offense came more off the rush back then too. It was a lot less cycling.
Yeah, it honestly looks like a pickup game, kind of.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like just end-to-end, you know.
It's very end-to-end, yeah.
You know, generate offense off the rush. It's kind of one and done.
Yeah, I mean, I prefer today's game.
I do, too.
Yeah. To watch.
Yeah, for sure.
But it's fun to look back and kind of appreciate some of the older, you know, generation. Yeah,
there's no doubt they had skill. I mean, Bobby Hull could really shoot the puck.
Yeah, I mean, I was even watching I think it was the game Mary Lemieux had 5 goals, 5 different ways.
Yeah.
So amazing.
And it was against the Rangers, and I was forgetting, because like, that game was recent enough to where I knew some of the players, and it was, I think it was Kovalev's like second year or something, or might have been his first year.
Cool.
And man, he was really fast. Like, really? His first, like, he was never slow, but you could tell in his last few years, he wasn't blowing by anyone, but
right.
In the beginning, he'd just fly through the neutral zone, and he'd put a move on a guy, and he'd just be gone.
Yeah,
and I was like, man, this is supposed to be like the dead puck era, but I think this is like right before they won it, or
before the Rangers won it.
Yeah, I think right after. Yeah, but it's funny because I was watching Lemieux, and I think this was before he had cancer, and I think when he had really bad back pain, and he just looks so stiff out there.
Oh, really?
He looks slow, and he's still scoring goals, but Jágr back then, just unreal.
I always say it. He was ahead of his time.
Yeah. I mean, he's still... It's funny because the stuff he does now, it still looks the same.
Yeah.
But it's not at the same speed.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, but he does still look very much the same.
Yeah.
It's kind of uncanny.
But some of those guys back then, man, like like Adam Graves and like Brian Leach.
Adam Graves was, I loved Adam
Graves. Yeah, and who's the guy that never gets enough respect? I can't remember his name.
From the Rangers?
Yeah.
Darius Kasparaitis?
No, no. Oh, that's another guy that they had. Shoot, I just forgot his name. Wow.
Stefan Matteau?
Who is the defenseman that played for Dallas, the Russian guy who was really good?
Zubov?
Yeah, Sergei Zubov. He was like a rookie or something. Man, that guy, like, it's just funny because like back then, this I think to me the skill stood out a little bit more because it just wasn't as much of a skill game.
Mm.
And you watch these guys, like, man, like, they look amazing. The guys who look terrible though are the goalies. Oh my god,
yeah, it's unbearable.
I was looking at who's the goalie net? The guy that's on Sportsnet, Corey Hirsch.
Oh right,
dude. Oh my god, I'm like, this guy's a professional athlete. he looks like he just can't skate.
Yeah, the technique.
They come out to like the top of the circle to challenge.
Yeah, I mean, like, remember that Patrick Waugh save?
Yeah,
when he was with the Canadians, how far out he was.
Yeah, yeah.
It's changed so much.
Yeah, like I love watching old time hockey because it just kind of it gives you a better sense of, okay, this is why they do stuff like this now, because the game now has become so it's almost too skilled. Like, I don't want to make it sound like it's a bad thing, but. Mm. Every guy, especially these younger guys now, can it's almost like they kind of all play the same.
Yeah.
You know, like back then, every guy kind of had a bit of his own flair, his own style to like how he handled the puck. Like now it's very streamlined, you know, like you go on YouTube and you see tutorials and you can get a stick handling coach and, you know.
They all look identical.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't want to sound like some curmudgeon, yeah. But.
I mean, I love it just because I'm really stoked to get away from the whole, you know, enforcer fighting thing.
Yeah.
You know, sorry to, you know, Haggerty for disputing his facts.
Yeah. Fact, not opinion.
Yeah.
God. I think if you have to say that, it's probably an opinion.
Yeah, probably.
It's like, you know, the phrase, with all due respect, or...
Oh, yeah, or no offense.
No offense. Yeah.
Yeah. No offense, oh, okay. Well, as I'm about to offend you.
Yeah, it's like... I never say no offense because I just think it's stupid. It's a stupid thing to say.
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
Because you're setting it up for basically...
You're setting the bar
right
at that moment.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think you have to go to work tomorrow.
I do have to go to work tomorrow. Not happy about it.
In about 6 hours?
Yeah. It is 12:30 in the morning.
So...
It's no longer Valentine's Day.
Yeah. Yeah. This was a good pod, though. We got a little sidetracked, but...
It's fun. It's just fun talking.
It was fun. I think people are going to get a... kick out of this one.
Yeah, we got very X's and O's here.
Yeah,
I kind of like it.
Yeah, a little bit of a different look this time.
I'm into it.
Yeah,
guys, thank you for listening to another episode of the Garage Hockey Podcast. If you want to hear more, we are on iTunes and Stitcher. If you want to get in touch with us and let us know what you think about the show or anything that we talked about, we would love for you to join the conversation on Twitter @GarageHockeyPod. Guys, until next time, thanks for listening.